So I'm doing my own demos. This, I do my, all my own stunts. You may be wondering, who in the heck is this slightly humorous ponytail guy up here? My name is Greg Shields. I am an MVP with Microsoft. I am a vXpert with VMware. I'm also a CTP with Citrix. More importantly, I'm a senior partner with a company called Concentrated Technology. That's concentratedtech.com. So if you have ever read a white paper or ever attended a webinar or ever probably saw a little micro video on any of the vendors down there in the expo, it may have been written by either myself or my partner, Don Jones. You can get a hold of me up there, and I've been doing this a really long time. So you guys are here probably because RDS has evolved. And you know, it's kind of funny, because RDS has evolved, and it is continually evolving. With the move to 2008 and 2008 R2, RDS is not just about desktops anymore, right? You know, we got to deal with apps. We got to deal with, you know, how we deliver those apps. We have to deal with kind of the basic structure of workflow for connecting users in with the applications and data that they require. Now, with the move to 08, and even more so the move to 2012, RDS is not just about apps anymore. RDS is also not just about sessions either. And if you're in yesterday's presentation, put your heads down because I'm going to spend 60 seconds on this because it's really an important facet of what I think is not being told you about RDS and VDI. And that is the notion that at the end of the day, the RDS session is one in an array, a cornucopia, if you will, of options that you have for delivering an application to a user. If we take a look at the different installation and streaming mechanisms that we have for getting an application delivered, the user really kind of sits at the center of all of these options. You know, back yesterday when I was doing that the other presentation, I kind of argued, hopefully successfully, that you know, one of the reasons why we might not be terribly excited about Windows Desktop. Like, anybody here excited about Windows 8? I mean, really? You might not be excited about Windows 8 and the desktop because we're just really not excited about desktops anymore, right? The desktop is a container for applications. And so as a consequence, when we look at all the different ways that we can provision an application, we can stream it or install it up to an RDS server, server-based computing, XenApp, whatever. We can do the same thing over here to one or more virtual desktops and then present that application either inside a desktop or as an application to that user. So when you come here and you start thinking about, well, how do I actually deal with RDS, it's more about how do I actually deploy applications to my user. Does that make sense? So this is kind of the evolving notion of where RDS is, and that's why you're here today. Because in this whole evolving, like, I need to get apps to users no matter where they may be, one of the big questions is, okay, well, how do I do that when the user is not within the nice stately confines of my intranet. So Microsoft's whole concept here is the notion that RDS is a key application delivery mechanism in and amongst a whole range of them. And RDS serves as a delivery platform for essentially connecting users up to their applications and data. And so from that location, I can either on the left use RDS or on the right use RDS in cooperation with Hyper-V to deploy things on desktops or on servers. Makes sense. Now, you know, the whole story, it was good in 08 R2. Don't get me wrong. If you haven't played with 2012 and RDS in 2012, go immediately to play with it. Because there are all of these, you know, those little itchy things about RDS, like having to build a second server and, you know, having to deal with a lot of just the management issues with RDS. A lot of those get much, much better in 2012. So that's my one little commercial for, you know, the 2008 to 2012 world, because there's a lot of oops, we're sorry about that situations that get resolved with that move to 2012. So when I have this requirement, which probably all of you do because you're here, when I have this requirement to say, okay, I need to get access to these applications, I need to deliver it to those users that are outside the office, that are not on the LAN, that are out in the world, that are at the Starbucks and the airports of the world, well, how do I get it to them securely? I don't want my internal network contracting some STD, some Starbucks transmitted disease. Well, in order to do that, well, what do I do? The answer simply is the RD Gateway. And so if you're wondering what this session is about, this session is about the RD Gateway and how you can actually implement the RD Gateway in a network very seamlessly to create this extremely seamless click on something in the start menu and ultimately get users access to that application no matter where they might sit. It really can be done, and it's that easy. It requires a $20, you know, certificate from GoDaddy, or you can make your own. So does this make sense? Any questions about that? Okay, good. So with that in mind, I want to spend just a minute showing you what a remote app is. Ta-da! Are you excited? You excited? Yeah? So what do you think of my demo? What do you think of my demo? It's great. Should be. Because I'm actually running this via RDS. This whole demo right here is running via a gateway connection and back to an environment, well, obviously an unlicensed environment, back down at the office. So that's my dramatic demo to keep everyone awake, because I wanted to kind of give you the proof that, you know what, this actually can occur and it can work rather well. So how many of you are doing internet-based RDS these days? A couple of them? How successful are you? Relatively so. It's honestly not that difficult to do. Now, what's interesting is that Microsoft, if you're confused about the process, one of the big issues here is that Microsoft's guidance is kind of difficult to understand. Okay, it sucks. And so you look at, for example, this document here called the Deploying Remote Desktop Gateway Step-by-Step Guide, and it just drives you absolutely nuts. And one of the reasons for generating this entire presentation was predicated on the challenge that's involved with this whole how do you deploy the RDG step-by-step guide. In fact, if you look at that document, what it suggests to you is to do exactly this. So from my external device over here up on the top, I connect over TCP 443 to a RDG that's sitting on my internal LAN, and then the RDG provides the point of proxy, for lack of a better term, for that connection over to port 3389 over on the remote desktop session host. Do you see any problem with this? I'm sure your security people do, right? Right there. Right? So are any of you security professionals? Right? If you are a security professional and your RDS person comes to you and says, you know what, I just need to open up 443 to this one server on the intranet, what are they going to say? You're right. Yeah, that ain't going to work. So the documentation illustrates or highlights a way that you can deploy the RDG that doesn't really grok. It makes most security people's brains explode. So that's kind of why we're here. Because the guidance that you're given really just doesn't work. And what a lot of people don't recognize is that there are, in fact, four different RDG architectures. This is the part that the documentation doesn't tell you. So how can you actually implement that RDG so that it will work and make your security person's brain not explode? The very first of these is simply not to have a DMZ and to put the RDG in the LAN. Right? This is the simple solution that the Microsoft documentation recommends for you. And it's totally doable, but it makes security people's brains explode. You ever try to make their brains explode? It's kind of fun, actually. No, this is what I want to do. No, you don't understand. So with that being the most simple solution, and again, this is totally doable. If you are a small environment, if you're an environment that has no care of security in the world, if you're an environment that this is of not terrible importance, you can do this. And in fact, it's actually relatively, you know, safe as long as you keep the thing patched. For most of us, that's not actually going to work. And so what we have to do is focus on some of the other alternative architectures that may work and still fulfill the needs of our network security team. Option two here is to actually implement a DMZ. Now, do we have DMZs? Do we have DMZs? We do, right? DMZs are good. DMZs are your friend, right? One option is to actually move that RDG into your DMZ. When you do so, you completely sever all of its brains from its existing Active Directory infrastructure. And so from this environment, I have my client that connects over TCP 443 to the DMZ, and then from that location, I then connect over TCP 3389 to my terminal server or multiple terminal servers. Now, this is also relatively simple. The security folks love this, but they don't care about the users. They care less about the users than you do, right? The users don't like it because there's no single sign-on. In fact, there is a required double sign-on for this thing to work. When you put the RD gateway, and this is actually not well known, that is a Windows Server 2008 R2 version of the RD gateway out there, you can actually put that gateway out there in a work group. You couldn't do it before. But you can now in R2, obviously in 2012. So what happens if I do that? What happens if I put it in a work group? Yeah, I gotta log into the RDG with one username and password, and I've got to log into the domain with another username and password. What does that cause? Incredible pain. Pain for you, because you've got to manage two different sets of, you know, you got a work group. I don't even know how to get access to users and groups in a work group anymore. And then also in the domain. I'm kidding. So this doesn't work out very well either. So, all right, let's now extend the domain into the DMZ. Let me ask you for option three. And, all right, let me be completely frank. I lied. There actually aren't four RDG architectures. There are actually six. When I extend that domain into my DMZ, it ends up, well, there are a couple different ways in which I can do that. The first involves using an internal domain controller and opening lots of ports. The second one involves using an internal RODC and opening lots of ports. And the third one involves a forest trust to a domain controller in the DMZ and opening lots of ports. So has anyone here ever read this TechNet article? Right? Hold your hands high. Have you read this TechNet article? Right? Is this not the most ridiculous TechNet article ever? And the best part is that this article is in revision 16. Right? And I swear that every time you read it, a kitten dies. This article, which has been around since I think the dawn of time, tells you that in order to extend or open up a firewall so the domains and trusts will flow through it, you have to open up TCP, what is it, 135, 137, 139, 445, and then everything above 1024 in order to make it work. It's just nuts. So most people never actually try that. It's essentially not really a realistic option, even though it is there, because the notion of extending an Active Directory domain into a DMZ is tough. There are lots and lots of ports that are required. That document that I was telling you about before, the first document, talks about putting an internal RODC in the DMZ and merely opening up 135, 137, 139, 445, and everything above 1024 to that RODC. Option three is the same thing with the forest trust, which involves maybe slightly fewer ports. So none of these are really fairly good solutions for accomplishing the problem. Great, Greg. So it's been about, 15 minutes of comedy hour, and we haven't really got anywhere. And most of this is really just to set this up so that I can show you this diagram here, which ultimately says that the option that 4 out of 5 security admins agree is the best option, or hopefully 5 out of 5, is it involves the use of what is called a reverse proxy. A lot of us don't actually have a reverse proxy in our environment. And one of the reasons why many of us are confused about the ways in which an RDG can get deployed is because that reverse proxy is kind of one of these extra little tools that has to sit out in the DMZ in order to support this. But what a reverse proxy does is it allows you to open up the necessary ports to get to the reverse proxy, which becomes the proxy for the RDG's proxy. So kind of a multiple hop scenario. With that in that environment, this is what you get. All of a sudden, everything makes sense. Security people get what they want, users get what they want, and dogs and cats live together in peace and harmony. Effectively, now you have one port that's opened up to this reverse proxy. The reverse proxy does a bit of effort on its part, and then from there, the communication path drops down to the RDG, which can then send things over to the terminal server or the RDSH server, whatever. So what is this thing? What is this reverse proxy? Now, a reverse proxy is a device that is used to bridge external SSL communications to the inside. Your inbound SSL communications are going to be terminated at that proxy. The proxy is going to typically will decrypt any SSL communication, inspect it for malicious code, and optionally reconstruct it back into a new SSL connection or a regular HTTP connection, forwarding that traffic inside. So it becomes kind of this point of, well, analyzing everything as the data goes in and out. The Microsoft examples for a reverse proxy are ISA, and then the Threat Management Gateway, the TMG, and then the Unified Access Gateway, the UAG. Now, that's not to say that you couldn't use one or more third-party solutions or other solutions that exist out there that support reverse proxying. And the RDG supports just doing that as long as it can handle certain features that are out there. But ISA, TMG, and the UAG are the three tools that are available to get you going. With that in place, or even not with that in place, even so, to get started with an RDG, you have to have a couple things first. Number one is a server certificate. Right? I'm going to have one certificate that I usually apply at the RDG in order to sign the traffic. I have to have an RDG itself. Then I have to have this sort of goofy thing called an TS, or now they call it an RD wrap and an R. Wow, I totally misspelled that. A TS cap and an RS wrap. An RD cap and an RD wrap. Potentially that reverse proxy server, and then whatever remote apps that you've actually deployed. With that, then we can begin actually extending those applications out into the internet. Interesting note. Does anybody here have a Unified Access Gateway, a Microsoft UAG? The UAG is also your RDG. So in one solution, you actually accomplish both things. The rest of us, we have to deal with two different devices. So server certificates must be a computer certificate, must be a usage for server authentication, and here's where people get tripped up quite a bit. The subject name must exactly match the RDG's external fully qualified domain name. It must also match the internal domain name if you plan on routing connections through it internally. So for those of you that have a disjointed namespace between your external world and your internal world, well, you'll have to have one of those special SAN certificates in order to support that, okay? A multiple domain name certificate. Where you can get tripped up here, and if you take one note in this presentation, it's right here in the bottom bullet, and that certificate must get installed into the local computer's personal store and not the current user's personal store, which tends to be where certificates get deployed to. If it gets put in the wrong place, well, then the RDG is not going to be able to find it a little bit later on. Makes sense. Most of us, we just go buy these things. But if you have a certificate services server in your environment, it's very easy for you to spit out one of these and just add it into the trusted root store for all of your computers. You will know that you've done it right if your certificate appears here. You'll see I'm looking at the add roles wizard for the RDG, and I'm looking at the server authentication certificate for SSL encryption, and that it's actually issued to server1.contoso.com. If that certificate appears, well, then we're good to go. Okay? Number two, an RDG. When you actually go about installing that server, you're going to get asked a couple of things. Number one is, what certificate do you have? Number two is, which groups are you going to allow to connect through that server? And then, how do you want to identify who can access the RDG? And once that person accesses the RDG, what sorts of resources should they be able to access on the inside? Okay? The CAP and the RAP kind of identify on the front end the who, and on the back end the what. Okay? For the users that we have, which of those users are we going to allow to connect to the gateway? And then once they've connected, well, then what sorts of resources are allowed outside of that gateway? So we're on the inside of the network. That's what the RD cap and the RD wrap are there to do. Let me show you. I hope it's not another storm like Sunday, right? Is that what that is? Or someone driving tractors around up there? So let me show you just for a minute here what that looks like. And the reason why it's kind of funny, actually. I want to show you remarkably how not that many configurations that there are here. Here I have my remote desktop gateway server. And on that gateway server, if I take a look at the remote desktop gateway manager, you'll see that there's not much here. What is with the storms in this town? Is it? So I call up my friend who lives here in Orlando, and I'm like, John, hey, what's up? I said, what was with the storm the other night? And he goes, oh, no, here in this town, we call that rain. Yikes. Here we have a very small number of settings that we have to set. Most of these, actually, you don't really have to deal with. The first tab here identifies how many connections that you want to support. Be careful, because if you're not running on top of an Enterprise Edition server, you can actually get limited 256 connections. Right? The Standard Edition only supports that few number of connections. The second tab identifies the SSL certificate to be used. You'll notice that if I choose to import the certificate, well, I can find it right there. Okay, that's my certificate. Then I have, on the third tab, an RDCAP store. It is possible to actually take multiple remote desktop gateways and connect them together in a load balance configuration. And in that sense, we actually point those to a central policy server for essentially all of its information. I can choose a server farm here if I'm creating multiple gateway servers together and linking them together in a load balance configuration. This is the location where I'll identify the two gateway servers that exist in the farm. A couple of auditing selections here for what I want to audit. And then this tab here, which is used whenever we're using any kind of reverse proxy. This use SSL bridging can be set up in HTTP or HTTP, that's really hard to teach with that noise in the background. It's crazy. In HTTPS or HTTP configuration. Now, you get a lot of questions, actually, from people whenever you see this, because when the reverse proxy server, your ISO, your TMG, actually goes about decrypting the traffic on the inbound side, well, you can elect whether or not you want it to go through the process to re-encrypt that traffic on the inside. Right? That takes extra time. It takes extra processing power, too, to re-encrypt the traffic. So if you trust your inside, setting HTTPS to HTTP bridging is generally an okay idea. But if you're concerned about having end-to-end security, well, then the top selection here will ensure that you have end-to-end security all the way through. The last one here is kind of fun. Whenever you want to identify a system message here or a logon message here for any of the users that may connect through that RD gateway. Okay, a lot of times many organizations will have some sort of "you have agreed to not do anything stupid" message that appears whenever they connect up through remote resources. Now, over here on the CAP side, this is where we identify first up, okay, which users are allowed to connect in via the outside world and via what mechanisms. here under requirements is where I can identify some really, really granular settings for user group membership, so which users are allowed to connect in, and also which computers are allowed to connect in. If you know that you have a certain number of laptops that you want to limit to specifically corporate laptops or corporate devices, this is a good location for ensuring that those devices are already a part of your domain first. Down here is device redirection. Now, a lot of organizations have a very different security policy for the situations where people are connecting in from the outside world than if they were connecting to applications when they're in the LAN and the applications are in the LAN. If you think about this, if I have some sort of database that I don't want users to, you know, suck all the data back out of it, restricting users from being able to use the local clipboard can be handy. Restricting users from printing things, restricting users from connecting up local drives can help you to ensure that you don't end up losing a bunch of data because users have connected from home and sucked all that data down to their home computer. So by setting these settings in this location, you actually can ensure that, well, when people are on the LAN, I don't care. But when you're connecting from the outside world, I want a very different policy for when you do end up connecting. Same thing. Wow, that is just incredible. Same thing here with timeouts, as far as idle timeouts and session timeouts. These will supersede anything that you're defining then at the local RDSH server, because this timeout generally will occur first. So if you want to, you know, make sure that idle timeouts actually occur at a smaller number of minutes than if you're on the LAN, generally that's a good idea, again, in case somebody accidentally leaves a kiosk connection open in an airport somewhere. Down here under the RD wrap, recognizes the configurations that get set after the user has authenticated to the gateway, and these identify what sorts of resources on the inside that you want that user to have access to. So these are, first and foremost, the user groups, okay, which users are going to be able to connect in on the inside, and then what network resources do you want them to access. Now, here's where things get kind of cool. As you can imagine, an RD gateway can be a useful tool for connecting users to their applications on your terminal servers, on your RDSH servers. A gateway can also be useful for those users to connect to their own machines, right? A regular Windows 7 instance has access to be connected to via remote desktop. We all do it all the time. This selection here allows you to either create groups or to define whatever resources you want to allow those users to connect up to their primary machines that sit inside the LAN. So if you want users to be able to work from anywhere on their machine, it's kind of like almost like a little mini VDI without you having to create VDI, sort of, but not really. Additionally, I can set authorized ports as well. Now, typically, this is just 3389, but I can set other ports if I want outside of the traditional TCP port that's used for remote desktop services. Any questions about that? There's one question you're probably asking. Well, all right, Greg, I've known about this for a while. How do things change? What is the complete and new experience that we have in Windows 2012? Let me show you. So keep an eye on the screen, okay? This is the screen that you will use to configure an environment in Windows 2008. Let me actually show you in at least the preview version that we have of Windows 2012 what this experience looks like in the world of Windows 2012. So if I log on here and go to my start menu and my remote desktop gateway manager, you'll notice that the environment looks remarkably similar. In fact, with just a couple of changes, the entire experience of managing an RDG in the 2012 world is generally about the same as it is in managing in the 2008 world. So everything about what you've done, if you've actually deployed one of these, will fairly well migrate over to the Windows 2012 days. Same sort of policies here. Same tabs, really, except now there's two rows instead of one row. SSL certificate, transport settings, this and that one's new. the RD cap store, server farm, auditing. Over here on the cap and the wrap, I can take a look at these and see same requirements, device redirection, timeouts. So really same stuff here, and there's not really much to see here as it relates to 2012 versus 2008. Any questions about that? All right. So with that gateway in place, the next step is obviously the reverse proxy server. Well, if you have a UAG, a Universal Access Gateway, then you're done, because the functionality of the Rote Desktop Gateway is built into the UAG. If you have a TMG, a Threat Management Gateway, or anything else, this three-step process is effectively what you need to go through. And I list them as generically as possible because there are a lot of different reverse proxies out there. And the odds of you having a different proxy from a different solution provider, not that you would ever buy software from any other company other than Microsoft, is fairly high. If you're concerned about performance, RDG is capable. The actual actions that RDG is performing are relatively lightweight, in fact, exceptionally lightweight. And Microsoft asserts that a single RDG can support up to about 1,200 concurrent connections. That's on a dual processor server with 4 gigs of RAM, and it can even be in a virtual scenario. As I mentioned earlier, too, be conscious of that standard edition. If you install the RDG onto a standard edition server, that standard edition server has a hard limit of 256 concurrent connections. We all know about the differences between standard edition and enterprise edition. And this is one of those that it kind of sneaks up on people sometimes. But this is concurrent connections. If you anticipate having more than 256 people connecting remotely at one time, well, you're probably going to be on enterprise edition anyway, really. Lastly is thing number 5 here, and these are reconfiguring your remote apps. Has anyone deployed remote apps via the create an MSI and then install the MSI mechanism? Have you done that? Here's the bad news. You're going to have to redo that. In fact, the process to enable these applications for remote access is going to involve uninstalling the existing application and then reinstalling the new application with the new settings. Interestingly enough, that option is not available in Windows 2012. So what do you have to do? For the remote apps that you've deployed, you're going to have to adjust them just a little bit. And that is specifically here in the RD Gateway tab under the Remote App Deployment Properties screen. And you can see where I can choose to either use the gateway server settings or automatically detect an RD Gateway server settings if I have DNS set up appropriately. There are 2 buttons here as well. The top button turns on a single sign-on between the initial credentials request and, that occurs at the RD gateway, and then the second credentials request, which occurs at the RDSH server. The bottom one is a really, really good idea, enabling it. Because the bottom one, unless you intend to run all of your sessions through the gateway, no matter whether the user is inside the LAN or outside the LAN, the bottom selection here ensures that your RDSH clients are actually going to connect directly to their hosts as opposed to through the gateway whenever they're on your local LAN. Okay? And for most of us, we don't need to run those connections through that gateway whenever they're, you know, out. Whenever they're on the LAN, anyway. Last step is just simply signing your remote apps. Now, the process to sign the remote apps is important because it ensures that there can't be some sort of man-in-the-middle attack between the user and the application. The problem is that the implementation of, well, how these applications end up connecting, the remote app implementation, sends up these little error messages that tend to confuse our users. So the way in which you go about eliminating this problem happens back at the remote app deployment settings screen, where you see the digital signature tab that is the option to sign with a digital certificate. You can use the RDG's server certificate here. You don't necessarily have to have additional certificates, but there has to be something there to sign that RDP file that gets deployed out to the different users. You'll want to install that certificate to the RDSH's personal store, the local computer personal store. And if you have correctly, well, then it'll show up there under the change button. In fact, I can show you here. So funny. Like, you get kind of a moat, like a, you're kind of on a roll whenever you're up here. And then when you've got all of that craziness going on over your head, it just kind of throws your mojo off. So back here under the RDSH settings here, I can take a look at the server here in the remote app manager. Here's where actually the we can elect to begin signing our RDP files. Under here, under digital signature settings. Here, and then change. Okay. Is anybody doing this? It doesn't necessarily get rid of the error message. It just changes the error message to make it feel a little bit more nice for the users, right? It doesn't worry them nearly as much. So I don't have the certificate here, so I can't show you, but these are the options that are available for doing this. Okay? All right. That's actually what this slide says. By signing those files, it creates that necessary authentication, but it doesn't actually eliminate the error message. The user sees just essentially a different error message as opposed to the error message that they have. So that's really kind of what my presentation is today. I told you I'd get you out of here a little bit early. There are a number of steps involved. Number one is obviously to attend this session. Get yourself a server certificate, build yourself an RDG, get yourself an RD cap and an RD wrap, potentially deploy that reverse proxy server, reconfigure and redeploy those remote apps, stay dry, and remember finally how much fun you had here over the last not quite 75 minutes. Thank you very much.